Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Power play let us down. Let us down big time. Not only let us down, but gave up opportunities, gave up shorthanded, mishandling pucks. A night where three or four opportunities could have made the difference in the game, could have won us a hockey game. I thought our 5-on-5 play real strong. Power play killed us.
Well, that's one way to look at it, and certainly statistically it stood out based on the number of opportunities that Buffalo was afforded, especially in the third period in Calgary, Marty. A loss to the Flames and now on to Edmonton, who I think is the best team in the Western Conference, who rolled over Vancouver last night in a, you know, expected, spirited affair. Well, the Oilers made it no contest rather quickly and just look poised to get right back to where they were at the end of last season. But we'll save the Oilers for tomorrow in our pregame coverage at 3:30. Right now it is looking at, once again, where they're at, which is 7 up, 7 down since the 13-game slide. They're still having trouble getting 2, 3, 4, you know, wins in a row, and that's the understatement of the show.
Yeah, and what gets you to winning 2, 3, 4 in a row? And often it's the special teams being able to put you over the top, right? 5-on-5, you focus on the play. If you're even with a team 5-on-5, and good teams, like Calgary is a good team, and you got the Oilers tomorrow, they're a good team. But if the power play can get you over the top in maybe half of your games, then all of a sudden, you know, you win games that you may have lost in OT, you may have lost by a goal, and you get yourself going. And in a game yesterday where the Sabres end up 0-for-6, but when it was 3-2, and, you know, before they give up the first empty net goal, then they got another power play. So really, they were 0-for-5, but I'm looking at that 5 power play situation right there and how the Sabres were not able to generate the chances and the momentum and be able to put Calgary away. They had opportunities. They had opportunities to tie it. Nazem Kadri takes a dumb penalty using his hand on the faceoff, and you're down 3-2. You have an opportunity right there. You're not able to. And why were you not able to? Well, it seems to me like it's the same things that has happened on the power play from the start of the season. And when you look at the numbers, there was a direct correlation between the problems on the power play this year and the problems on the power play last night. And it gets to zone time and entries. And those are the two areas that the Sabres have struggled with. But it makes sense. If you have problems with entries, you're going to have problem with zone time. And the Sabres are bottom in the league, like bottom 5 teams in the league in both of those categories, and it affects the bottom line on the power play.
Why?
Why? Because number one,
no, why is it still happening? Because you just referenced start of season.
So. Yeah, I think it's a personal thing. Like I've mentioned a couple of times, JJ Paterka, Jack Quinn being able to work really well on entries. Right? They seem to have found a little chemistry. Yesterday, I saw a lot more of Cousins trying to get on the entry, a lot more of Thompson getting on the entry. And I don't know that those two have had the success on entry that the Sabres need to have to be able to come in. I'd much rather see a Dahlin trying to get in on the entry. I think he has a better sense of what you do over the blue line. Just like I said, I think Quinn has a really good sense of what to do with the puck over the blue line, or Paterka in that same thing. I'd like to see Yuri Kulik in that situation. Get him the puck. Have him come in on entry and see if that works. Well, Yuri's not on the top power play right now, so he's not getting those opportunities. But I think there's a personnel change that could be had on the power play to facilitate entries. That's the first thing you have to work on. Facilitate. Look, they had 8 minutes and 9 seconds of power play time yesterday, Duffer. They only had 2 minutes and 12 seconds of offensive zone possession time. That's a quarter of the time that you had on the power play, that you had the puck in the offensive zone. That's below your team, your league, below your season average. This season, the Sabres are 28th in the league in offensive zone time of possession on the power play. It comes down to that. You're not spending time in the offensive zone, so you're chasing the puck, and it's down at your end. You can't get the chances you want.
Well, they had to obviously make a personnel change this week with Zucker dealing with illness, and they won the first game without him against Vancouver. Maybe a lower opportunity game from a penalty and power play standpoint, but you know, and also the exclamation point on everything you've talked about so far is they give up two shorthanded goals. So
yes,
it's fine. Power play goes 0 for 5, 0 for 6. You can't be dash 2. They were dash 2, and that's the game. That's literally the game. So
and in Vancouver they were 0 for 2. Now, if you went 0 for 3 and 0 for 4, could that have made the difference? Because if all of a sudden you need the one goal, like 0 for 1, 0 for 2, I'm saying that's fine. You're going to get some nights where you're going to get only one power play, two power plays, you don't score. But maybe the game wasn't about the power play. The game was about 5-on-5, and the 5-on-5 will get you. But when you get 5 or 6 power plays, you need to score at least on one of them. You need to give you the chance to be plus one. Right now, they were minus 2 on the power play yesterday. Made a big difference in that game, and that was your opportunity to take a step forward, to say, hey, you know what, Seattle, we laid an egg, and it was puck battles, we returned to form in Vancouver, let's keep going. That didn't happen.
So where do you view, because he spoke on it, and the coach certainly spoke on him, where do you view Dahlin in trying to navigate this? Because, you know, the coach said he struggled last night. Dahlin himself obviously wasn't thrilled with the power play. We talk about all the assists that he's getting.
Yeah.
And goal scoring from defense is tricky. Like, you like and expect certain numbers over the course of a season and a career, but like the best defenseman, unless it's like Paul Coffey, 48 goals, they fluctuate year to year, right? Like a Roman Josi can go from 22 down to 10 and back up to 18 and down to 9. You know what I mean?
The opportunities are not as consistent as a forward to get goals.
Like, we don't talk about he's a 30-goal scorer every year, right?
No.
But you expect the points. And so Dahlin has been ultra consistent in that regard. But when you take out a catalyst like Zucker, does anything change for Dahlin? And again, he's 7 years into this. It's his first year wearing the C. And until the breakthrough moments happen from a team standpoint, I am always going to look with concern with how he's just absorbing all of this and trying to get everybody better and more successful in these critical moments.
Yeah, so I may make a few excuses for maybe more of last night on the power play. And Dahlin turned the puck over early in the power play. It led to a Rasmus Anderson kind of 2-on-1 breakaway chance that UPL saved. And then I thought he did a good job keeping the puck in 3 times before the last one, which led to Huberdeau. But the Sabres have a lot of moving parts on the power play. The best power plays are the ones that it's automatic. You know where everybody's going to be. It's pass, 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 and it's like, boom. You know where, and it helps a guy like the power play quarterback, like Rasmus Dahlin at the point, for example, to know, this is where I'm at. I've got my left option. I got my right option. I got my net front option. Everything is fine. But when the Sabres move around like they do, where Thompson is being moved around in the slot and Quinn on the left side now, and you have Peterka on the right, and it changes the way that your options are, you always have to take a second to think, okay, well, where are my people? Because it's not as automatic. And I think it affects Dahlin at the end in the plays that he can make, because nothing is automatic. The Sabres tried 3 times in the first period yesterday to hit Thompson in the bumper position. Well, Thompson is a right-handed shot. If you're going to try to hit Thompson in the bumper position, it has to come from the right side of the ice so he can one-time it. They tried 3 times through Jack Quinn on the left. Jack Quinn tries to bump it to Thompson in the slot. Thompson's a righty. He's not going to be able to catch the puck, rotate, open up, and shoot it. Right? That's not going to happen. So you have to find the best placement for everybody and the best approach for everybody. And they're still looking for that approach and that placement this far into the season, which will end up affecting Rasmus Dahlin and how he can control the power play, because it's different every game.
Sabres in Edmonton tomorrow, 3:30 pregame, 4 o'clock on MSG and here on WGR Sports Radio 550. As far as, and at this point, to be determined whether Zucker comes back, Lindy Ruff was certainly speaking to the severity of the illness with which he'd been dealing and, you know, the challenge that would be trying to get Zucker back in tomorrow after not practicing, not playing, not eating particularly well, all that stuff. It obviously will be taken into, you know, great detail as far as his availability. And I don't know, common sense almost says at this point, like, just
he's not gonna
get him home.
Yes.
You know, you start a homestand on Tuesday, but you also know full well the desire, especially when you're coming off a loss, to get in there and do everything humanly possible to help, right? That's typically
especially
the
a veteran like Zucker, who's like, Zucker at 80% can help more than, you know, having another game of 11-7 where maybe you don't get the impact, especially on special teams, that you want to have. So I think he's looking at it and said, I can help. Put me in, coach. Like, even if I just help the power play, I'll do it.
So beyond the power play, though, and beyond Kulik with Paterka and Thompson, and yes, Zucker's absence is noteworthy here, but, you know, kind of where are they at, and then how much more does this keep weighing on the inevitability of getting closer to the trade deadline in March, and just the next level of pressure, talk, speculation, whatever you want to call it, right? Like, no one is immune to it, but when you're where they are, it becomes heightened, right? So, like, how do you view just kind of this world that this group, and let's focus on the forwards right now, you know, kind of where they're at? Because, you know, we talked a long time ago about the whole sustainability thing, like when they were actually having, but they were
or
never
four,
able to get the four
like points, right? Of sustainability.
Yeah, but they were never able to get 4 wins in a row, you know, which is still obviously when you look around at the other teams in the Eastern Conference that have been able to stay in the race. I mean, the Rangers are now up to a 10-game point streak, right?
I'd love to get 3 in a row, like we did a bunch of, like the Sabres did a bunch of times in the start of the season.
Right.
Can't get that ball rolling right now either. And it's weird because I look at lines, I look at Krebs, Benson, and Quinn, and I'm thinking, that has been a good line, 5-on-5. Even yesterday, you know, when they're on the ice, the shot attempts are 19-8, the shots on goal are 10-5, like, it's been a good line. Are you scoring as a line? Are you creating? Like, the numbers look good, but is there the end result, right? And you want the end result to be there. So now what happens is, well, because Jack Quinn is playing better, and because the Sabres are in the position they're in, so now the insiders around the league are starting to put their boards together, and Frank Cervalli just has Jack Quinn now appearing on his trade bait board. Why? Because, well, maybe that's a player that other teams are going to target and say, hey, you know what? We like the upside of Jack Quinn, and maybe he hasn't had the best of seasons, but we see something now that we like out of him, so we're going to call on him, or we're going to have that conversation on him. That's where they're at. And this is a situation where most of these young players, the Paterka, the Cousins, the Quinn, have not been in, because for 2 years it's been, these guys are almost untouchable. Don't call me about Jack Quinn. Don't call me about Dylan Cousins. Don't call me about anybody that is young and playing well. We're not going in that direction. Well, now it's a different challenge, mentally and physically and whatever, for some of those players that they're going to be asked about it. They're going to be hearing the rumors, and that's a different position to be in. So, that's an utter challenge more than, you know, having to figure out, you know, your lines and how you're moving ahead, you know, to the next game.
Anything on that front? I mean, Shannon Goldman from The Athletic is going to join us at the bottom. We'll get around the NHL in, you know, details like that. But, you know, also whatever else is of significance. But like, are you seeing anything on, let's just use Cervelli because you just mentioned him.
Yeah.
Anything like new and intriguing?
Well, intriguing is a weird word.
Because remember, two can play this game, right? So it's not just
exactly.
Look who somebody throws on the board that belongs to the Sabres. Like, maybe you're seeing something else out there that's like, you know, this would be something worth pursuing. And it's not like we don't talk about all of this all the time, but again, it gets a little more narrow in our focus here as we, you know, touch the end of January.
When you're talking about trade targets, I mean, what always kind of I look at is who are the young players that are being offered or available, like a Joel Farabee. And Farabee has been in trade talks for a while now. He's not having the best of seasons. He's only got 18 points in 46 games, but he's 24. But then I'm like, is a 24-year-old a target for the Sabres, or do I want the Sabres to think of, okay, let's kind of look ahead to what guys that are older that can come in. Like Zucker came in and had an impact, right? Why? Because he's older and more experienced. Uh-huh. So it's hard to look at those players right now going up to the deadline. The guys that are available are mostly rentals. The guys that are young are underperforming. So it is a very tough position to be in if you're Kevin Adams and the Sabres thinking, how do you make moves for the future and acquiring players that will give you that boost, that give you that experience that I really feel the Sabres need. They need more experience in the roster. Even the guys that they have, the young guys that have played all these games, they're still young. They still have only lived in one city with one organization. Like, they haven't experienced other players, other things. When Alex Tuck came in from Vegas, the impact he had right away, number one, he was a little older, but number two, it was such a positive impact just in practice, the approach that he took. Well, getting other guys like this that can have that impact, right, because of the experience of being with other teams, I think it's a challenge. But, you know, there's definitely going to be some rumors around with players like Jake Evans, for example. There's a lot of teams that are going to want him. But do I want this guy for the Buffalo Sabres? I think you're going to overpay on a guy that is going to fill a role that you don't need right now.
Right. Noteworthy last night, based on we had a little Penguin discussion earlier in the week. Brian Rust left the game for Pittsburgh due to injury. Chandler Stephenson in Seattle left that game prematurely due to injury as well. So little things to keep in mind. Jacob Markstrom. The update from the Devils today is he's gone 4-6, so there'll be no Four Nations for him. You know, are they able to navigate in that shorter window, I guess? I mean, 4-6 is a lot better than what it could have been.
Yep.
Jake Allen and obviously, you know, Utica started the year, I think, 13 straight losses. The American League obviously made a coaching change. They've actually been head above water. If you throw those 13 aside, like, they've been very competitive, a lot better. Poulter's been the better of the two.
Yep.
Down there on the farm, Dawes numbers. But I mean, it's also hard to erase a start of a season when you're a goalie. Like when you go that long, right? Like it's tough to erase some of those numbers. But you think the Devils will just stay the course here with?
I think they will. Until at least the Four Nations face-off, and then they'll know better after if Markstrom is going in the right direction. When I have to applaud the New Jersey Devils. That was a press release for an injury, basically stating he has sustained an MCL sprain. Mm-hmm. That imaging revealed that, okay, it's going to be 4 to 6 weeks. Like, okay, we all can stop speculating, oh, well, what if it's 12 weeks? We know that it should be 4 to 6 weeks. Now, after the Four Nations face-off, so you're looking at the end of February, That's in about 4 to 6 weeks. Is he going the right direction? Is rehab working? And is he back on the ice? If not, then as the Devils, you probably have to be responsible and maybe add an insurance policy to go along with Jake Allen just to help. But if everything's fine with Markstrom, you put a pin in it, and he's back, and he's back playing in, you know, at the beginning of March, then you're totally fine with it.
Well, we're only 2.5 weeks from the Four Nations.
Yeah. So then 2.5 weeks to Four Nations, 10 days for the Four Nations.
Or at least the break. Okay.
Yeah. You're about 4 weeks. So, you know, by that point, you have a better sense of, is he trending the right direction? Was there a setback? So I think you can wait until after that, at the very least, before you have to start, you know, kind of checking around to see what would be available.
If you want a really fun exercise to do at home, run through the NHL's top goal scorers and recognize that more than half of them are not taking part in the Four Nations. So that's fun. It's
yes.
Not exactly best on best, but you knew
well,
that
it was
going
best
in
on
when
best
Leon
on
Draisaitl
December 1st.
Didn't have a team to play for. So
it's best on best on December 1st for the teams that are playing, but it's still, look, Team Sweden now has no Jacob Markstrom, and we don't know the status of Linus Ullmark for the tournament because he still, like, hasn't played.
It's okay. So Gus was really good for Minnesota last night.
Yeah, exactly. He was good early in the year, and it's been dropping. He wasn't good for Minnesota last night.
No.
So who are you looking at now that potentially could come in, right?
Well, UC Saros also leads the league in losses, so it's not been like a banner time for Finland. And honestly, the craziest thing last night, again, for the second time this week, we need more home and homes, and we need more obscure home and homes, like the Nashville San Jose home and home this week that ended 7-5 Preds and 6-5 Preds last night. They had to. I mean, I think this is inevitable when you have the type of game that they had in the first one. Whichever goalies are starting,
yeah,
guys, this is your night. Like, we're not making changes here. And so that meant for some challenging times for Askarov and Anunen.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, Marty, the two of them in the third period in a 6-5 game were absolutely sensational. And I just thought, wow, what a credit to these young guys in an environment that can't be fun when you see these ridiculous numbers being posted. And they were exceptional. But the one, you know, so the bad news for San Jose, they lose again despite valiant effort on home ice, coming back from 3-0 down, 5-2 down, whatever. Nashville has won 5 in a row, 7 of 9. Forsberg has scored in 7 straight games. He has 9 goals in this goal-scoring streak of 7 games. He's the first player in NHL history to have a 7-game goal streak immediately after going goalless in 18.
Yeah.
So
usually those guys don't go goalless in 18 when they're just going to score in 7 straight, but yes.
But aside from the top players, Marchessault, Stamkos, Josi, and Forsberg scoring, the greatest silver lining of late for the Predators, a team that has not necessarily been able to cultivate and push prospects into the NHL. Fedor Svechkov has scored goals in 3 straight games. He now has 6 goals in 18 on the year. He's a first rounder from 2021. This is exactly what they've been dying for in Nashville, to have youth. Because remember, Evangelista and Novak went silent at the start of the year. And so all of a sudden, there was nothing beyond the top 5 or 6. So this will be really interesting here to see whether they can keep it going.
Look at their schedule, Duffer. They have Anaheim on Saturday.
And then next week, they have Vancouver and Buffalo.
Yeah. And then after that, they have Pittsburgh, Ottawa, Chicago, Buffalo. Mm-hmm. So you look at all these games before the Four Nations face-off, and you're thinking, what if they go, you know, 7-1 in their next 8, right? Mm-hmm. And do they have 8 left? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So they have 6 left, 7. What if they go 6-1 in those 7?
Right.
And all of a sudden, they're right there with Utah and St. Louis and Vancouver and knocking at the door. Last year, they went 16-0-2 to, like, save their season.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying you have to go 16-0-2, but what if they go 7-8-1-1 in 10, right? And all of a sudden, you're back in it. And Nashville has that ability to be able to do it.
Yeah, just do what Montreal and Columbus have just done in the East. Yeah, I was thinking like 15 games or more. The Rangers will get there. They're points in 10 straight right now. Still not the longest point streak in the NHL. That belongs to the Capitals. They are at 9-0-3 in their last 12 games. And
Charlie Lindgren yesterday, Duffer. He's back after the injury.
It's a nice line, but obviously Ovi's empty netter and Protas's comment about it. They don't ask how, they just ask how many.
Yeah.
And I'm like, good for you, Alexi Protas. And even Spencer Carberry said, you know, for an empty netter, this was a lot tougher.
Well, he had to fight somebody. And then like, well, the fight, he was winning a one-on-one battle inside the blue line, gets it in. I get it. And Ovi is the all-time empty netter king.
Not this season, though. Who leads this season? Who's the cookie monster this year?
Who's the cookie monsters in empty net this year? It's got to be a good team. I'm going to say, how about Willie Nylander?
Mikko Rantanen.
My next pick was Leon Draisaitl, and then it was Rantanen. Those are the three guys I was looking at.
Rantanen has 7. Kaprizov, more empty netters per game. He's got 6, despite missing a huge chunk of time. And Ovi and Adrian Kempe come in 3rd at 5. So
okay. Well, that is, I like that. Let me see where my man, Willie Nylander has 4. So I wasn't too far when I think of guys that are on the ice late in games and have scored a lot of goals.
20 goals away is the great 8 from the great 1.
Man, Mikko Rantanen has 13 empty net points, 7 goals and 6 assists. Nate MacKinnon has 12, 3 goals and 9 assists on empty net points.
Yeah, Colorado leads the NHL in empty net goals. So, yeah. And that was another thing that, you know, the truth comes out usually in very difficult times. And Darlene said it pretty bluntly last night, right, when talking about 6-on-5. It feels like we get scored on every time.
And we talked about that feeling second goal last night, but yes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you have to just control your emotions in the sense that you can't be too eager to jump and say, we got to create offense. You have plenty of time. Make sure you have puck possession before you start going to the offense. And look, they had already given up an empty net goal, but then you have a face-off in the offensive zone, and the same thing happens, right, where you lose a battle, and boom, they go up the ice, and to me, that is just being a little bit more patient, defending, getting the puck possession, and then being able to create offensively. And the Sabres were just too eager to try to get on offense in that one.
Talked about the Predators a moment ago. They will be not the headliners on Rob Ray Hall of Fame night. Predators are here, though, for that night on January 31st. Our doors are opening at 5 at KeyBank Center. Ceremony to honor Rob and his induction into the Sabres Hall of Fame begins at 6:05. First 10,000 fans in attendance to receive a commemorative pin set. Sabres.com/tickets for that. Shana Goldman from The Athletic is next.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome back. Sabres are in Edmonton tomorrow afternoon. Pre-game coverage begins at 3:30. The Amerks are on the road in Providence tonight. Devin Levi is back, and he gets the start there as Rochester tries to jump back into first in the division. They're 1 point behind Laval and Cleveland at the moment. Shana Goldman is with us here from The Athletic, her regular Friday time slot, and hopefully with a wrinkle. Like, I need you to throw a new team, a new name into the mix here based on events that have unfolded in the last 7 days. There are some interesting team results and some, you know, some poor individual performances happening across the board. What is top of mind for you right now, Shana?
So many options. You know what? I'm going to throw a curveball at you guys. Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay.
With the Vancouver Canucks implosion in mind.
Yes.
Which is astonishing, every facet of it. What if Utah makes a playoff run because management starts buying at the deadline after they get Sergachev and Durzi back from injury?
What is the likelihood of that?
Who's to say? New ownership, new vibe. It seems like I mean,
are you letting us in on some insider info here that you've heard that this could be the thing?
You're like me. You want to will it into existence. Like,
I mean, they have one, three
to will
in a row,
John Gibson to Pittsburgh into existence because I think they would need him.
Well, should John Gibson go somewhere?
Yes. Yes.
Where?
Yes, I'm done. I'm done with the saga.
He's played well enough this year that he should have convinced somebody, if they really need it, he should be on the market, right?
Yes. I don't think he makes sense for a team like, I don't know, say the Devils, where it's like, you have an injury and here's a replacement because it's a multi-year deal. That's a one-off kind of guy. Mm-hmm. But the team that still stands out to me has to be the Hurricanes. I'm not thrilled with their goalie picture. I could see them making a little bit of sense for the teams that are in that, you know, playoff vicinity or just outside of it. Like, you look at all of them, and in the East, I go, Carolina is the one that the goaltending, I don't even want to say the least sure, because Florida, I'm least sure of, but they have too many commitments to consider this. But the Canes are the one that I feel like have that openness on the books for a goaltender, and I feel like it's one area I'd like to see them shore up. It's not my number one priority, but it's like, it's definitely in the mix.
Okay, you mentioned Vancouver, and you're talking about the East and teams that are in the mix and whatnot. So I'm going to go to the Rangers because they were linked to the Vancouver Canucks with JT Miller, and Ryan Lindgren was potentially linked in those conversations as well. Is Ryan Lindgren on the market right now? And wouldn't teams, I know he's had some injuries in the past, but man, he's 26 and plays a hard game. Wouldn't teams want to line up for a guy like Ryan Lindgren?
I think right-handed defensemen are going to get the higher valuation than the lefties, so I wonder if that factors into it at all, because we see at the deadline, like, very middling, you know, right-handed defensemen go for first-round picks. I wonder if they feel that that might not be an option. But if I'm the Rangers, I would definitely consider moving on from Lindgren, because I think there's a couple things at play here. The fact that he's a UFA at the end of the year is priority number one, right? And I don't think the Rangers see that long-term future with him. They opted against extending him long-term last summer and went for that one-year deal, and for good reason, right? One, his game has declined, and two, the injuries are a legitimate problem. And I think that the two are really linked here, because we don't know how much his game has declined because of the playing style he plays. We know those kinds of defensemen don't always age as well. There's a lot of wear and tear. Guys like Chernak are in and out of the lineup. Dane Girardi had a shorter career than I think he probably anticipated because of it. The other part of it is the Rangers system doesn't agree with him, and I don't think you need to build a roster to fit a coach if that coach is not the long-term option, and I still am not sold that Laviolette is. So I don't think you need to completely revamp the blue line at this point. You should have done at the beginning of his tenure. But, you know, that all three zone play doesn't agree with him. So I could see why the Rangers would go. It's just not a long-term fit.
But do you think they're less likely to make a deal now that they've figured it out and are 7-0-3 in the last 10?
That is going to be the big question, but it really depends on what the Rangers think that their true trajectory is at this point, because I think you have to take the entire season in stride and not be too swayed one way or another. It's very easy to drink the Kool-Aid right now. It's very exciting, but I just think that they need to think big picture. You can get into the playoffs, yes. Can you go on a real run? And I know with a goalie like Igor Shesterkin, especially the way he's playing lately, you can generally go on a run. But is it going to be enough to match or exceed what they did last year? Is it going to be enough to match up to, say, the best in the Atlantic? Like, I'm not so sure. So I do wonder if they think of the big picture the entire time and maybe say they like someone like Will Borgen, keep him, and then move on from Lindgren. So you're a little bit more proactive with your approach this year.
When are you guys coming up with your list at the Athletic? Because everybody seems to be coming up with their list now. Are we going to see, like, a Shayna Goldman list with your crew over there when it comes to the potential trade targets before the deadline?
I know that they have the trade boards up, and I am taking the trade board, and I'm going to be spinning out, you know, the trade destination pieces very soon. But I think the thing I'm going to focus on is some of the guys who are having down years, and maybe guys like a Brock Nelson, his scoring is down. Should they be worried and go deeper into that before hitting the destinations? Same with someone like Yanni Gourde. And also kind of look at the guys like Mikael Granlund, right? Like, he was a regression candidate. He did not regress. But will he do worse if he goes to a contender like what happened in Pittsburgh, if he's not in the top six and has less support around him? Like, will that totally kill him? So that's going to be my take on it. I leave the insidery stuff to the insiders, and I'm just here to talk around it.
Brady Tkachuk. Do you think his name, much to the chagrin of anyone in the upper management of Ottawa, do you think his name will get back in the cycle? Inexplicably, he has gone pointless in the last 9. The Senators have been shut out four times in that stretch. Miraculously, they have more wins than losses. They're 5-3-1 in that time. But something has gone amiss here for Ottawa. Do you think if they're on the outside that his name will get back in the cycle, right or wrong?
I think mentioning his name right now might be soft tampering. Like, that's a whopper of an accusation to make. I really don't. I think that it's a different front office. It's a different vibe. This is not the Pierre Dorion era, so I would say no right now. But I do find it interesting every single time this team takes a step forward and things are on the rails, they just slide right back. It's unbelievable. Every good streak. I remember earlier this season, I wrote something about the three up-and-coming Atlantic teams, the Sabres, the Red Wings, the Senators, and how we were waiting to see their next moves and finally turn the corner. And a lot of Senators fans were upset with me because they're like, look, this team is finally playing well. You should have written this a week ago. And then what happened? They stopped scoring goals, and it was great. Linus Ullmark was doing his thing. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why. I know linear is not a progression is not linear. It's not a straight line, but I mean, it zigzags way too much for this team.
Okay, well, I found the trade board, the Chris Johnson trade board on The Athletic. So a name that jumps out at me, he's down lower, like 27th on the board, but it's Justin Brazeau of the Boston Bruins. I have always liked the physicality that he brings, the size that he brings. He's a good skater. Why would the Bruins be interested in trading Brazeau at this time when they're in a playoff spot or fighting for a playoff spot? I think there'd be a lot of teams, like maybe even the Sabres, that could call and inquire on a Brazeau.
Why would they do it? Because Boston management does many things they should not do. why would anyone high up let the current management run the deadline would be my bigger question, because I think you're going to do so much damage that the next general manager is going to have an even bigger task at hand. I do think they're a team that should be considering a quick reset, right? In similar vein to the Capitals in 2023, without necessarily taking that extra year in between that they did, which they had their reasons for, like move some pieces out of the deadline, reset, refresh, use those assets to do something in the summer and see where you can go around. They have that elite core, right? You have McAvoy, Pasternak, Swayman. You have pieces at all three positions. Brazeau would not be the player I'm moving out of. I'm Boston, I would be thinking of the weights on the salary cap, the weights on the books. That would be first and foremost my priority. I would not be trying to strip away at any of their depth scoring. I would be trying to bolster their play down the middle. I have questions about the Bruins. Serious questions.
The Capitals are still number one in the NHL. What might they look to add at the deadline?
That's a good question, because it's such an active offseason that you have to wonder how much more does this team want to change? I would imagine we see moves like contract extensions for Logan Thompson, first and foremost, and then you kind of go from there.
Chychrun.
He's a very interesting one. I don't know how quickly they go to do it, because I feel like they found a way to maximize his game, but I don't know how much of a raise any team is going to be willing to give him from his last contract, and rightfully so, because the consistency year to year is not there. The injury history is a little bit scary for a lot of teams, and he has to be played in a very particular role in a very particular way to thrive, and I know the Capitals have found that, but I wonder if that's the answer for them moving forward a little bit more. But, I mean, I feel like a depth defenseman, a depth forward, like little small moves is probably the way to go if you're Washington. I don't think they need to make some giant splash and spend a lot. They've been very good at targeting players that they're buying low on and then just finding a way to plug them into their system and help maximize their game. Like, that should be the theme moving forward some more.
Maybe, like, away from the trade talk, but, I mean, the Columbus Blue Jackets are one of those teams that they score a ton. They seem to be on the up, right? We remember when the Sabres were kind of that team 2 years ago, that the vibes were great. Like, the vibe check, Chyna. You're always good with the vibe check. Adam Fantilli lately has been one that's on the way up. He was drafted third behind Connor Bedard and Leo Carlson. I think those two are going to get big money when their contract expires. They can sign an extension this summer. Where do you see Fantilli and his kind of place with those top-end guys, especially those that got drafted in 2023, I believe that was?
He has such a high ceiling, and it's really nice to see him hitting his stride at the NHL level and playing at this high level consistently, obviously it helps that he's getting support from two really good line mates, right? That Columbus Blue Jackets top line was absolutely thriving when Sean Monahan was playing down the middle, and they've been able to just, you know, swap Fantilli in and keep it going. But what's so impressive to me is his playing transition and just the speed in which he skates with. And the perfect example was last night against Carolina. I think it was Columbus's fifth goal of the game. I might be mistaken, but it was a Werenski shot that got tipped in front. But it started with Fantilli just racing up the ice, right up the wing. I could not believe how fast he was skating, to the point where I got a text from someone going, did you speed that clip up? Like, nope, that is the real deal. That is his speed. I was so blown away by it that I was hoping it turned into something, because I knew I was clipping it anyway. Like, please have a goal attached to it or a really great scoring chance, or no one's going to care about this, because I'm so impressed by him. And I'm impressed by him in the big moments too, because I think that game against Toronto, besides the fact that it's the center of the universe, that's a game where his family is there and you're going up against one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. And I think he showed a lot of poise to score in all situations there, to have a shorthanded goal, to have two at even strength. I think we're seeing that he truly has what it takes to be a top six center in this league. So I'm very excited about that moving forward.
It would have been a remarkable win for the Jackets on the road last night, playing in the back-to-back, having defeated Toronto the way they did. Unfortunately for them, they are 0-7 in the second of back-to-backs this year. Minnesota got healthier but looked worse last night. Utah was able to win. The Wild have lost 4 of 5. We all know their cap constraints, etc. They've been pretty uneven. Now, granted, Kaprizov missed the majority of this uneven time for them. What do you think the Wild do at the deadline?
It's going to be interesting, because this is not the year, I think, to go big and spend as well as they've done. I would just say keep positioning yourself to make moves next summer. Don't necessarily take yourself out of the race, because the West is, you know, is pretty solid, right? There's only one spot truly up for grabs in the Western Conference. So I want to see if they make any savvy moves that like help them now and in the future with that kind of mindset. And I think we saw that already once this year with their acquisitions. I'm like, okay, like there's definitely the potential for it. But last night was really concerning. It's interesting because I don't think they're generating enough offense on the road. And the goaltending has been a little bit suspect. As good as Gustafson was to open the season, like I think he's trailed off a bit the last couple games as well.
It's flower power time. Let's go. Marc-Andre Fleury. Make it happen. Maybe his swan song. Maybe he retires after that. Who knows?
Talk to me in 3 years when he's still gone. Shayna, thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the tennis, the hockey, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic will wrap up another week of Sabres Live after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Well, now I'm sad reading this date in Buffalo sports history, because I, as a kid, liked the All-Star game.
Yes.
And I love the fact that, I mean, how can you not love this fact? Like, Rick Martin scored with a minute 39 left at the odd, and then Perreault scores in overtime to win it, and the Wales Conference beats the Campbell 3-2. Like, now, like, I 3-on-3 format, whatever. I know everything has changed. I'm old man sitting here and it sucks.
Duffer, it's not that. I remember going
it is,
to the
though.
AHL
like that's,
All-Star game.
Anything you say like this makes just, it just exacerbates our age. And
no, I get it, but it's
me.
Not like
I don't
you're
be that
old,
guy.
It sucks. It's like the All-Star game used to mean something, and then it doesn't to the players. I went to the All-Star game in the AHL. It was a 2-1 game. Everybody wanted to make a name because they're like, everybody's watching. Mm-hmm. Like, we wanted to be at our best. It was physical. It was you defended. You hit. It was great. We're talking about the 98-99 season. Mm-hmm. It's not that long ago. But even now, you watch the AHL All-Star game, people don't really care about it. And that to me is like, oh man.
Because it's formatted like, yeah.
Yeah, but even before that, it wasn't like people are trying not to get hurt and just whatever, right? You're happy to be there.
Are you happy to join us tomorrow?
Yes, happy to do a little Saturday afternoon, kind of the appetizer before the big Bills game on Sunday. Looking forward to that too.
Yeah, we're on the air at 3:30 tomorrow afternoon. Sabres, Oilers. We'll see you then.